Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 25th day of October, Anno Domini 2025. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 5 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Get off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? Because for your edification and delectation, here comes the news. On Monday, October 20th, a severe Amazon Web Services outage took out many, many websites, apps, games, and other services that rely on Amazon's cloud division to stay up and running. That included a long list of popular sites like Venmo, Snapchat, Canva, Fortnite, Facebook, Disney+, Reddit, Lyft, Apple Music, Apple TV, Pinterest, Fortnite, Roblox, The New York Times, all of you people doing Wordle. I don't know what you did. Zoom, DoorDash, Grubhub, PlayStation, many banks and crypto exchanges, a huge number of other websites and data servers, AI sites like Perplexity, and e-commerce sites like eBay and Etsy. Even Amazon's own assistant Alexa was affected, and if you were wondering why the internet seemed to be against you, you weren't imagining it. Amazon said it identified the trigger of the event as a DNS resolution issue for the regional DynamoDB service endpoints, whatever that means.
It's always DNS.
It ran into more problems as it tried to solve the outage, but it was eventually able to fix everything. The outage lasted from around 1 p.m. Eastern to about 7 p.m. Eastern, leaving huge numbers of people with nothing to do but talk to other human beings in real time. Horrifying. In all, the estimated cost so far is running into the hundreds of billions of dollars and left a lot of workers and students with an unexpected day off. What this points up is that we've consolidated an enormous amount of the internet to just a handful of companies like Amazon, Google, Microsoft, and Cloudflare. While a few companies spread their internet presence over more than one site, many companies, particularly the smaller ones, have only one online provider. Any disaster recovery expert will tell you that having a single point of failure is a very bad idea. How much business would your company lose if it went offline for 6 hours? So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Amazon's AWS outage. AWS is Amazon Web Services, by the way. So I guess Amazon's AWS is redundant. Amazon's AWS outage knocked services offline for hours. And your choices are, it was horrifying. It was really annoying. It was inconvenient. Honestly, I didn't notice. And you, of course, can vote in the poll. It's easy enough to do. Just head on over to soundbites.org. That is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And you can vote in the poll there. And, of course, if you'd like to talk about that or about dang near anything having to do with computers or whatever, give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415.
So Amazon AWS services is doubly redundant.
Yes. It's triply redundant.
The automatic ATM machine.
Exactly. So it was... What the thing that really interested me was there's apparently this company that lets you manage your bed.
Several of them.
With an app.
To control the temperature, you know, track your sleep, things like that.
And the angle of the bed and how it does.
It automatically raises when you snore.
Right. And those all went offline.
Yep.
Which may not sound like a real problem from 1 to 7 p.m. Eastern time, but A, not everybody's in the Eastern time zone. And B, there are people who work trick shifts.
Mm-hmm.
Or just work nights.
Yeah.
Or are taking a nap in the middle of the day because their kids are down.
A lot of reasons.
Yep.
A lot of reasons. So
there was a one of the congresspeople was saying, you know, it was horrible that the internet is run by one company. So, Well, okay, no, there's five, but yeah.
Yeah.
Five is, one is bad. Five is still pretty bad.
Five is still pretty bad. Well, but that's like what I said.
Yeah.
You know, we've consolidated all this in this power into five companies, and one of them, Amazon Web Services, does a massive, massive amount of that. And when it goes bad, lot of sites go bad. And, you know, any company losing 6 hours of income is bad, but particularly for small businesses, you know, that can be a disaster. That a 6 hour outage can put you out of business.
Yep.
So yeah, I feel really bad for those folks.
And according to the latest statistics, Amazon Web Services is only 30% of the of global market share.
That's right.
So split, you know, 100% five ways. Well, and then 100 little tiny ones. Okay, yeah. So AWS, Google Cloud, Oracle Cloud, Microsoft Cloud, Alibaba. So they must have a lot of the Arab and Asian services. Yeah.
Well, what it is they do a lot of high end, very large data sets.
Yep.
So when you've got something like Alibaba, which is like a billion products, that's where you put. I beg your pardon. I apparently am dying right here.
Hairball?
Yeah, clearly. Sorry. All right, we should probably go to the phones. Our first caller is Ed from Ithaca, New York. What's up, Ed?
Good morning, guys. Off speakerphone. So my old PC is too old to be able to upgrade. So I got a newer PC that could take Windows 11.
Mm-hmm.
And now I want to know what can I eliminate on it? What can I do to make it just more run more efficiently, faster, less clogged, whatever?
Put Linux on it.
Debloat it.
Yeah, put Linux on it.
Decrapify.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, good.
Is your computer a name brand, or is it a custom build?
It's HP.
Okay.
I got it from Woot. I don't remember if it was rebuilt or whatever, but it came clean, but with Windows 11.
So there probably isn't much third-party bloatware?
Yeah, not on fresh install.
Well, yeah, there is. I mean, there's a bunch of games.
Well, there's a lot of Microsoft games.
There's a lot of games, and there's a lot of stuff you don't really need.
Revo Uninstaller, the paid version, you can use Revo Uninstaller. That'll go in there and look at all that other junk that's installed and let you uninstall it from the machine. Like the Xbox, if you're not doing Xbox, or the, like Nick said, the games, or if you're not into, say, radio show, you know, radio, listening to radio or that type of stuff, there's different apps that they throw in there extra besides the regular, say, YouTube, that is just bloatware.
Okay, I did not see any of that on Revo. I have the regular free version.
Yeah,
That's not considered. Those are installed programs, so that you could see them there, but they're not going to be flagged as something you could remove.
Ah, okay.
The paid version gives you more options. Uh-huh. Like we've said before, you know, you get what you pay for, and you know, as far as support and everything else.
Yeah, going through your auto startup apps can help a lot. So like Microsoft Edge auto starts. So when you want to use the Edge browser, it's ready for you better. But when you turn your computer on, it takes longer to boot because Edge is starting.
Plus, so it's always there saying, you need me?
But if you're using Chrome or Firefox, you can turn off Edge auto start. I've posted a link from How to Geek on how to turn off a lot of the extra junk that Windows has.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's things, you know, if you don't need Microsoft Copilot.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, or you don't need their media player because you use, say, VLC or something else. If you don't use their mail and calendar because you're using Google or somebody else.
See, a lot of them do what they're called TSRs, Terminate and Stay Resident. And what they do is they sit down there in that little start bar constantly saying, you need me? You need me? You need me? And that's eating up resources.
There are some third-party debloating tools, but don't run those.
Yeah.
They can get overly aggressive and delete too much. There was one on the Mac that deleted all the non-English languages from every program you have loaded, which made, I only need English, right? Yeah, but now the program's been modified and it won't work anymore.
Yeah, right. Well, and there is a thing called Tiny 11, which is Windows 11 without the bloat. And there's one called Nano 11, which takes out even more stuff. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it gets a little aggressive. Like, it takes out the clock. It takes out File Explorer. Maps, you know. So, I mean, you may not want OneDrive integration, but you might want Notepad.
Yep.
You know? Right. So, right. You know, what you take out is something you should decide to do yourself.
One thing Steve Gibson had mentioned on Security Now is he runs the enterprise version of Windows because it doesn't come with any of that crap.
Right.
Yeah, Home and Pro do.
Yeah.
Right.
But enterprise costs a whole lot more.
Right.
But he's already part of the developer program, so he gets it anyway.
Right. Okay. Well, that's very helpful. Thank you.
All right. Good luck.
Another question. Yeah. I have another question if you have a moment. So my old PC, I was thinking about putting Linux on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering how I go about, and I'm sorry, I don't mean Linux, I mean Chrome as an operating system. And how do I do that?
Okay, so what you want is something called Chrome OS Flex.
Flex, okay.
Right, because the Chrome operating system is built into Chromebooks. But there is an open source version that's just called Chrome OS Flex. It is Chrome OS.
Uh-huh.
But it will run on pretty much any hardware.
Uh-huh.
And so you can do I don't know if we have a link to it.
I'm going to pop it to the top.
Okay. Steve is popping a link to the top on Chrome OS Flex. And you install it like you would install any operating system. You put it on a thumb drive, boot with that thumb drive, and install it. And it essentially makes that laptop run like Chrome OS.
Okay. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, and thanks for all of the good work that you do with the really useful information for all of us who are
thank you, Ed.
Informed.
Thanks.
Welcome.
And keep listening. And keep being a member. We are in a membership drive. We are in a pledge drive. We have twice a year we come to you and ask you to be generous. And I know that these are not easy times economically, but they're not easy times for us either. And we need help. We need your support. It's real easy to become a member. All you have to do is head over to jazz901.org. Hit that big red donate now button. Takes less than 2 minutes. We have membership levels if you want to become a member at a level, but we have, you know, any amount will do. If you can, you could join at the Jazz-O-Matic level, which makes you a member immediately at a larger level. But, you know, it comes out of your account once a month. We charge your credit card once a month. Only for a year, just a year, and you can quit at any time if you need to. We understand that. But, you know, it puts a little more in our pocket with a much lower bite every month for you. And so we need your help. We're about halfway to our goal, and that's great. But, you know, this is the last week, so we need to do it now.
And you can go to the jazz901.org website, click the big Donate Now button, and secure online donations for our relatively techie audience.
For our techie audience, they are secure.
Yeah. Although I have to yell at Rob. He has an advertisement for Jingle Jazz Radio. It's too early for Christmas.
Yeah, yeah. It's way too early for Christmas.
We don't even have Halloween yet.
No. I know. At least wait until after Halloween. But I wait until after Thanksgiving. Let's give seasons their
time frame.
Yep.
Yeah.
So we can all get ready for Jingle Jazz Radio in 2 months.
Yeah, right. Exactly. All right.
Exactly 2 months from today.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We're going to go back to the phones. We're still going to talk to Ed, but this one's in Pennsylvania somewhere. Where are you, Ed?
I'm in Osceola Mills. It's the central part of PA.
Okay. What's up?
My question. My internet provider is Xfinity, and I've had no problems with it. I was eligible for a new modem, and so I got one. It's sitting in a box. It's a XBST. Now, from what I've read on Xfinity's site, they recommend downloading an app to activate a new modem. But I can't do that. My iPhone 8 only goes to iOS 16, and the app takes iOS 17. Now, I was wondering, when I did install my initial gateway from Xfinity, I was able just to do it right on my desktop computer. Would I be able to do that again since I have an Xfinity account? Just disconnect the old modem, hook the new one in, power it up, and do it from my computer?
Maybe.
Yeah.
If the modem has a web server built into it, and it uses an address that you know, probably 192.168.1.1. And so what the cable modem companies have done is they've released apps to make it easier to set up the modem, so you don't have to go into the web server and do all the manual things manually. So you could try it and see if it shows up at that IP address. Or if you have a friend that has a newer phone, to be able to download the app and use it that way.
The other thing
now,
is... Go ahead.
Well, I have an iPad Air, and that has a newer iOS. I could download the app there, but, you know, the iPad only works on Wi-Fi. So when I have the old one disconnected, I wouldn't be able to do it that way, would I?
Yeah, because the phone only works on Wi-Fi also. So what happens, you plug the new modem in, and the modem has a what's called a DHCP server in it, so handing out IP addresses to the network. So the app on your device is going to look for the Wi-Fi network it's creating and look for the IP address on the network. It does a network scan to find that device.
It should work.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Now, of course, the other way they recommend, there is a phone number you can call to activate that way.
Yeah.
If what you're suggesting doesn't work, what do you recommend about that? I've heard that's kind of iffy and takes some time, and you eventually have to actually talk to a real person.
And you
have to do the phone app. No.
Yeah, and you have to give them the MAC address on the bottom of the modem. So that it looks like, I'm looking through the Xfinity pages now, it looks like there's a QR code on the modem that you scan with the app, and that does the auto configuration. Without that, then you have to find the right numbers on the bottom of the modem called the MAC address.
I have that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yes, the first thing I would try is installing the app on your iPad, scanning that QR code and see what happens. If it works, you're done.
Uh-huh. You do that before I disconnect the old modem, of course.
No, I would do that. I would connect the new modem, turn off all your devices except the iPad. Turn off the old modem, turn on the new modem, connect the new modem, turn it on.
Because that has to be connected to the ISP wire.
Right.
So and you have then to unplug your old modem.
Right.
Coax.
So first, download the app with your old modem. Right. Download the app onto the iPad with your old setup. Then turn everything else off. Turn off your modem, your old modem. Remove it. Put the new one in. Turn it on. Scan the QR code with the app on the iPad, and you're on your way.
Okay, great. Would I be able to keep my old Wi-Fi name and password?
You should be able to set it to be anything you want it to be.
Right. It will come predetermined as some new name, but you should be able to change it to the old name and password. And that's actually an advantage if you can do that, because then the rest of the devices on the network
will automatically
pick it up, especially like thermostats and doorbells and set-top boxes where you don't want to type that password in. So if it can be the same name and password, that makes it easiest.
Okay, all right. Then I'll just take my old gateway to the nearest Xfinity store since they want them back and recycling. Yep. Okay, hey, thanks a lot for your time. I appreciate it.
All right, good luck. Have fun.
Hey, take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
For certain definitions of fun.
Well, yeah. I would find that fun.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the it used to be that there were web servers built into most routers. And you could log into them and make all kinds of great changes. Now, they all want you to use an app, and the number of things you can actually do are much more limited. Which is easier for the average user.
Yeah, the techies hate it, but average people, it works a little better.
Right, right, right. So, yeah, that's, you know, we that's the way that works. If you want to, you know, I have a Google Mesh network, the Google Home network, and it's just not, it's not as satisfying.
I've got an Eero, and I can't even get a DHCP table.
Right!
It'll tell me what devices are online, but not in table form, so I can see all the IP addresses. So,
I can get that.
I can't
print it.
Yeah.
Or save it anywhere, which makes me angry.
Screenshot.
That's about all. That's stupid.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Rick from Pittsford, New York. What's up, Rick?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I am windowless. I converted my last three Windows PCs over to Linux Mint. Been quite happy with it. I use LibreOffice for everything, and I'm having a problem with the toolbars. The icons and the fonts, like Arial and that, never came over, and I don't get the icons on the toolbars. It's more or less just, you know, the words, and it's very confusing. So I'm just wondering, and it's on all three of them, and it's not on the Chromebook that I use with LibreOffice. That came in fine. So I'm wondering, did I screw up something in the bringing over LibreOffice?
Probably not. It just needs to be set up properly.
Okay.
So in all of these, you can go into, I think it's Tools. Customize, I think. Tools Customize, Tools Options. Hold on a second. Toolbars. Tools Customize, Toolbars.
Tools Customize, Toolbars.
Right. And you can decide what's on the toolbar, what order they're in, and all kinds of stuff.
If it's an icon or a text or both.
Right.
Usually. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I just found that, and... All right, I'll try that.
Yep. And some of the fonts, like Arial, are owned by Microsoft, and so you have to use equivalents, basically.
Yeah, the equivalents that I've got are really, it's a very small list. Now, the Chromebook, the Arial came over, but Helvetica and that just don't show up on the Linux Mint.
Linux Mint may use interesting point. Does
so Helvetica is sometimes called Geneva because Helvetica is the Swiss name for Switzerland, which Geneva is the capital of. That's a great movie, Helvetica, the typeface. You gotta read the Helvetica.
That's a good
movie.
Thing. So the default system font in Linux Mint. Are you running 20 or 19?
19, I believe. I didn't upgrade it.
Okay, then the default system font is Noto Sans, N-O-T-O,
yep.
Sans. If you want Microsoft fonts, there should be a... you should be able to install, using the installer, a program called TTF, as in True Type Font, dash... MS Core Fonts dash installer.
Okay.
And that will install all the Arial and Times New Roman and Courier New and all of those fonts.
I also see a command here called apt search Helvetica font.
Yes, yes. But if you want the actual...
Then you have to do them one at a time.
Right, yeah. Right. But if you want the actual set of original Microsoft fonts, then it's TTF MS Core Fonts Installer.
Okay. Well, I think you may have solved the...
Okay. All right. Good. Let us know how that works out. We got to take a break. Sorry.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. This is the perfect time for you to head on over to jazz901.org. Make that pledge. Hit the big red donate now button. Make that pledge. It takes just a couple of minutes, and we'll be right back with a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. I hope you got your pledge in during the break because now we're going to talk to Kevin from Greece, New York. What's up, Kevin?
Hi. I bought a new PC, Windows 11 Home. I set up two accounts on it. One is an admin account, and one is a daily user kind of account.
Good. Good move.
But every time I turn the computer off and turn it back on, it defaults back to the admin account.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is my Windows 10 computer didn't do that. It always just went right to my daily user account. I only use the admin account when I wanted to, you know, install new programs or something.
There is an auto login preference set, so it automatically logs into that one user.
Does it log in, or does it just bring them up on the screen for you to log in with?
It opens, and then it says sign in and, you know, ask for password and whatnot.
Right.
So it comes up, but it comes up to that, you know, to the screen defaulting to that admin user.
Is that alphabetically first in your list of users?
That's possible. I should look at that. Okay.
So maybe. So it's not actually logging into the desktop. It's at the login window.
Yeah. Yeah, it's at the login window. Yeah, okay, so maybe it's smart. Maybe I got to set it to a lower number, yeah, or something like that, lower letter, so the other one comes up first.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. I tried to look this up online, and aside from mucking about with the registry, some places said because this is Windows 11 Home, I don't have the option to change that or disable that.
That is certainly not an impossibility. I got to be honest with you, but... Start with the alphabetical thing.
I just found that an article like that, and the user order list is stored as a registry key.
Okay,
you don't want to be messing with that.
No, right, but I could change the username and see if that changed, you know, and then
can't
hopefully
hurt to try.
In the background it changes it in the registry. Okay, all right, we'll give that a try then. All right, good, thanks.
All right, good luck.
Okay, thanks.
So it's probably. The admin user was the first one you created, so that's the one that's first in the list.
Yeah, it may not be possible to change it, but...
Add a new admin, which will now be third in the list.
Right, and
then delete the first admin.
Right.
So the standard account is now first.
Right. There's a way around it. You just have to be both creative and sneaky.
Or never log out.
All right. I'm going to read the security news because this amused Dave more.
This one was good.
Ireland hosted a pwn-to-own competition this week, where hackers compete to be the first to find a new exploit to compromise various systems and software in order to win big cash and prizes. Day one saw them finding 34 zero-days, or previously unknown vulnerabilities. Day two found 56 more, and day three found 73. In all, a couple of $1 million were awarded.
Could you imagine, though, if they kept going?
Well, yeah, exactly.
And 73 new problems that companies are going to have to fix that they didn't already know about.
Right. And we should remind every Windows 10 user, the people who have paid for that extra year of support, if those 73 bugs, and then plus 56 plus 34, if any of those bugs are not security bugs, they will not be fixed in Windows 10.
Yeah, you got to live with them.
That's right. That's exactly right. So Microsoft is currently working on a new Teams feature that will use Wi-Fi network connections to pinpoint a user's exact location for, or as we call it, spying. For context, Teams will automatically update a user's work location when they connect their device to an office Wi-Fi network. According to the Microsoft 365 roadmap post announcing the new feature, when users connect to their organization's Wi-Fi, Teams will automatically set their work location to reflect the building they're working in. This news comes after many organizations are rapidly ditching work from home and hybrid work arrangements. Word of warning, Microsoft. Snitches get stitches. Not shockingly, Microsoft is unhappy with the fact that around 400 million people have opted to keep Windows 10 for another year. So they're starting to issue scary reminders of how vulnerable your Windows 10 systems still are, flagging the hidden dangers, and I quote, the hidden dangers of unsupported systems, end quote. They're asking, are you leaving the door open for hackers?
No, you are, Microsoft, by not patching it.
Exactly.
Hello?
If you're suddenly unprotected, then you are. Microsoft warning is aimed at enterprises, highlighting the risk in unsupported systems as initial entry points for ransomware. Windows 10 is the key. Don't need to break your strongest lock. The big thing about Windows 10 is we've never had this many endpoints fall off of support in a single day. The risk is really unprecedented, and hackers are going to go after the weakest link. And that's Windows 10. They just need to wait until you leave a window open, so to speak. And hundreds of millions of windows will now be open. And while Microsoft will continue to provide security updates for another year, many bugs are not considered a security risk. Until, of course, they are. Apple has removed T, the women's safety app, which went viral earlier this year before facing multiple data breaches, from the Apple Store. Apple says it's removing the app as well as a copycat called T on Her for failing to meet the company's terms of use around content moderation and user privacy. T, by the way, is an app that lets ladies talk to other ladies about boyfriends they may have had in common. So,
and how much of a jerk they were.
And how much of a jerk they were. So Lady A stops dating Guy A. Lady B starts dating Guy A and says, hey, anybody online dated Guy A? Now Lady A can come in and say,
make her comments.
He's a jerk, yeah. Apple also said it received an excessive number of complaints, including ones about the personal data of minors being posted in the app. Of course, we don't even know your real name, so it's safe to give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415.
But the bigger question is, now if they had gone and, you know, extended it for a week.
What a week?
This Pwn to Own.
Pwn to Own, yeah.
I mean, this was just three days. And each day, it kept growing more and more and more to what they found.
Now, I must say that there were multiple systems. It wasn't just Windows. It was Macs. It was Linux. It was Chromebooks. It was Xboxes.
And a lot of times they do voting machines and cars.
Everything. Yeah. And they gave out well over $1 million in prizes to people who found exploits. The idea is you find an exploit that nobody's ever seen before.
Mm-hmm.
You prove that exploit works. You show the company how you did it, and then they pay you because they can now fix that hole.
There's been some interesting concern that white hat hackers save up these 0 days to go to Pwn to Own and win the money. So they might have found it 6 months ago, but you're vulnerable because they want to go win the money. But on the other side, there's bad black hat hackers that will pay even more for those hacks.
Right.
So it's we need the good guys to keep doing this, and we need bug bounties from companies. If you don't want to run it your own self, there there's a consortium, the Zero Day Initiative, where they will pay the bug bounty and do all that managing, and you know, you just kick in your membership fee,
right?
As a company, somebody's going to find the bugs. If not you, then somebody else, and you want a good guy.
And there are a number of companies that do bug bounties. Google does bug bounties. Microsoft does bug bounties themselves.
But my other concern, though, is that list from just that weekend, that doesn't get out, that, you know, or leaked out somehow, what they found to other mischievous hackers.
Well, we don't know that those aren't out there. We only know that these people found them and took the money to tell the company about it.
The bad guys could have already found them and exploiting
them.
Exactly
right. Yeah.
But the way it's supposed to work is the good guys find them at the show. The companies are there receiving those reports to fix them.
Instantly.
Usually 90 days is the
Oh, yeah, receiving them instantly is what I meant.
Yeah. The 90 days is usually the disclosure option. So, but most people wait longer than that, depending on the severity of the bug.
There's more than one case of somebody, and this happened to Apple, for example.
Yep.
Some guy told Apple about a very bad bug they had. Apple did nothing, and the guy finally said, okay, screw it.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the bug, everybody.
Yeah.
If you're not going to fix it, there it is. And then Apple had to scramble to fix it. They knew about it for months.
I still remember there was a bug in the ImageWriter LQ.
Oh, yeah, the
Impact printer.
Yeah, yeah.
If you try to print a purple ampersand on a black field, your computer will crash.
Yes, yes.
And it's they had a tech note. This is, we don't know why it's doing this. We figure it's not that common an instance, so we're not going to bother fixing it.
I want to shake the hand of the guy who found it.
Yeah.
What? How?
Why were you printing a purple ampersand on a black background?
Right.
Because I like purple.
Right,
sure.
Yeah, right.
Yep.
Maybe it's his logo. Who knows? All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Andy from Greece, New York. What's up, Andy?
Hi, guys. The gentleman who wanted to get the Microsoft Core fonts.
Yeah.
If he can go right in from Linux Mint and do an install, and it's one of the first packages that comes up. You do that, Mint puts it in, and then LibreOffice picks it up.
Yep, that's exactly right. TTF-MSCoreFonts-installer.
Yep, and it picks it up for every app
to restart. I would reboot, but you may have to restart Office before it gets picked up, because it really loads the fonts at startup.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, I got out of everything, went installed it, and then
right,
went back
exactly. Exactly.
LibreOffice, and it came up perfectly.
Right. Useful. I mean, with any of these systems, there are equivalency tables, right? So maybe, Arial or Helvetica is something else in Linux, Noto Sans or whatever it is. So you will get a font. You just don't get exactly the font you want. And for someone who's really into printing, that's the most annoying thing.
Yep.
When the font is close, but not right.
Yeah. Or they rename it.
If you're importing spreadsheets from your previous machine and you don't have the right font.
Right.
It just doesn't work right.
And it can mess up line endings and screw
everything.
Up pagination.
All kinds of things. So it's basically the easiest thing to do is just go out and get the TTF core fonts, load them into the machine, and then everything works fine.
Yep. All right, thanks.
And yes, this is the voice of experience.
Yeah.
And all these, I'm amazed that all these people are wondering what they're going to load into their machines between Chrome OS for people who don't do a heck of a lot and Linux Mint, which isn't that hard to get up and running. I'm surprised Microsoft hasn't started losing a lot more business than they already have.
Well, they're forcing people to look at Linux. I mean, that's what they're doing.
Or Chrome.
Or Chrome or whatever, right.
Yeah, for
right.
the simple users
right.
that don't want to learn a whole new operating system like Linux, a Chromebook is perfect. If all they're doing is surfing the internet and emailing.
And they may already be using the Chrome browser, so they're 90% there.
Yeah, they're 90% there. And if you're looking at putting something on an old machine, Chrome OS Flex essentially turns it into a Chromebook. So you get that same simplicity. And again, Chrome OS Flex is free.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Exactly right.
I was going to do it anyway when I was going to force when my Windows boxes started refusing to boot.
Right.
I was getting blockchain errors and did that two or three times with my wife's machine and reloaded it. When mine started, I said, okay, I got all the parts. Time to just bite the bullet and live on my Chromebook for a week or so while I build a new machine.
Yep, exactly right. Exactly right. But,
I remember when the font menu first started displaying the name in that font.
Holy crap.
That was the graphics power of the computer could finally display the font in the menu.
We got calls about something wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People didn't know what it was.
My menu doesn't look right.
Right. There's something wrong with my menu. No, it's... Are you in the font menu? Yeah, this is why.
It's showing you the name in that font.
Yeah.
Well, especially the script fonts that you can barely read.
Well, yeah, right. All right, thanks, Andy.
No problem.
I hope Steve-O is listening about building that new machine. Steve-O has been not building his new machine for weeks now.
Somehow, I have 407 typefaces installed.
Oh, yeah, Piker.
Yeah, I don't remember installing that many.
That's low.
So that must have come with the computer, most of them.
My machine at home, my wife, holy moly.
I've got a bunch of Adobe fonts.
She's a printer. She's got degrees in that stuff.
A hoarder of them.
So, yeah, she has to find exactly the right font for exactly the right thing, which she may only ever use once.
Hey.
But she's got to have that one. Exactly.
That could sell product or, draw attention. Which is key.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And then there's my friend CR, who has a degree in this stuff, who can tell you more about it than I want to know. But it's font management used to be a pain in the neck.
Yeah, true fonts.
I remember in Word, yep. WordPerfect.
Computers were so limited in power and memory, it couldn't load more than two or three different fonts at once.
Right. But now, you can have 400 fonts sitting on your hard drive and just grab the one you want when you want it.
And that's
and everyone always picks Arial.
Serifed fonts.
Yep.
Serifed fonts only.
Times Roman.
Yeah, see?
Times Roman was always too small for me. I like Palatino better.
I like Palatino. I like school book.
Century school book is my favorite.
New Century school book.
Yes, I like that was an all-time favorite. And then since a lot of them, don't carry that anymore.
You can install it.
Oh, yeah. No,
you can install it on Linux.
It's just a matter of
doing it.
Time and doing it.
I get that. I once went through and looked at all the fonts that were available under Linux, and I thought, yeah, this is more than I need. Even me.
Yeah, because, matter of fact, this other software that I've been talking about for, 2 years now?
Yeah.
They finally announced that it's coming out Monday. So...
I'm sure you're taking the week off.
I already been working on it this past week, setting stuff up that I'm ready to go. But one of my key things, and this is what I love about it, is the guy that, is the head of it. He's a down-to-earth guy and really into his users. And I asked him a question, about the different fonts and another question. And he came right out and said, no, that's not on the list, but you can import it. I said, yeah, all right, I know how to do that. But, we've been anticipating this software for 2 years and 9 months, and it's officially coming out on Monday. And, I'm going to be buried it up into the room getting that ready. But he's done a fantastic job getting rid of Microsoft Access.
That's hard.
Yeah, and he's gone to SQLite. He literally had to take this company that he bought and say the heck with Microsoft and started it from the bottom up.
Yep.
Rewriting everything. He goes, things might look a little different. We tried to keep some of the stuff familiar, which he did, but he added other features that it's like, holy shoot. Yeah, this is a lot nicer looking than everything else, and it's faster with the SQLite.
The Jet database
unbelievable.
Engine is very slow, very slow. And, back in the day, it was fine because people weren't using it for much. But when you get into large data sets, the Jet engine is terrible. And SQL by itself is good, MariaDB, SQLDB, all of those derivatives, SQLite, are all excellent, and that's what they're for. So why not use them? Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, because
and I just want to go back and remind people, if you're interested in fonts, fonts.google.com.
Because that's web safe fonts, or another whole term.
Yeah, there's a whole other story there.
There are so many different fonts out there that you could go again blind sit there now. And key thing is though, have a pad and pen next to your computer, so you can sit there and write some of the names. Because as you're going down the list, you might see one. Oh yeah, I like that one. And then you get scrolling on down these hundreds of fonts. Wait a minute, what was the name of that one? And you try to go back up and find it, and you won't.
Yeah.
Because they all start to look different and somewhat the same and could easily confuse you.
There's a whole section on Halloween fonts, so if you're like that. And you may well have noticed that on the Soundbites webpage, we're using Noto Serif Display for the titles and Noto Serif Georgian for the text. Because it's an interesting looking font. That's why.
And it's an easy read, too.
It's an easy read.
Yeah.
And that's the big thing for me. I wanted, so many websites now are all about, well, we designed it to look modern. No, you designed it to look like it was a designer.
Mm-hmm.
I designed the Soundbites website to have a little bit of flair, but mostly so that you can see things and get to things.
Because that's what, when somebody goes to our site, bottom line,
that's what they're
looking for information that we've told them, go to our site and do the security tango. Go and look one of the recent posts that Steve put up there and follow that link and do that information. Or if you want to listen to a previous show, go there and you can click on it and listen to the previous show, which hundreds of people do each week.
Yep. So, yeah, fonts are important. Fonts are useful. Fonts are something we mostly don't think about, but...
Well, you remember the early days, 1985, when the LaserWriter and PageMaker came out.
Yeah.
And suddenly you could do your own desktop publishing. And people put 100 fonts on a single page because they could. Well, the first websites looked like that, too.
Right, they did. But even before that, the Hercules graphics card.
You
had more than one font.
Yeah.
People went nuts. The problem was not everybody had a Hercules graphics card.
I remember those.
But you could have more than one font on the screen, and people went crazy for it. You know, those...
Going back.
That was going way back. But, yeah, people want to be, and yes, everybody laughs at what's the name of the font? The Ransom font?
Comic Sans.
Comic Sans.
Oh.
But they also did a study. And it turns out that for dyslexic people, the easiest font to read is Comic Sans. They can make the most sense of it because the letters are so very different from one another that it's harder to mix them up.
Yeah,
that made a whole lot of people really angry.
It's true, though.
Yep.
But it's true.
No, it is.
Comic Sans has its place.
I just downloaded Noto Sans.
Yes.
75 individual variations of the font.
Oh, yeah. It's bold, regular and regular bold and,
italics.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. It's not just a font. It's a font family.
And the features that you can put in there, bold, underline.
Right, right.
Italic.
Right. And then, some fonts don't look good small, some fonts don't look good big, blah, 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 blah. And it's
it depends on your audience and what you're doing with that particular page that can either make or break you when you select the fonts. Like you said, you could make it so... hard to read and, disorienting people and what they're trying to accomplish that, it's like they get frustrated and move on.
Yep. I am not a great graphic designer, but I'm kind of proud of the Soundbites webpage. It looks all right to me.
Yeah, no, it looks great.
It's all right to me. So the big thing is the ability to convey information. You can convey more information with a serif font than with a sans serif font. You can convey more information with a larger size font than a smaller size font, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All right, listen. That music tells us we're done with the first hour of this show, but do not despair. There's a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show coming your way. A whole nother hour of Dave Enright, a whole nother hour of Steve Ray, a whole nother hour of me, Nick Francesco, and a whole nother hour of you, but only if you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. I have not done to you with information about the pledge drive yet today, only a couple of times, but please, this would be an excellent opportunity. Please, please head on over to jazz901.org. Hit that big red donate now button. Make that pledge. We need your dollars to stay on the air. You do that. We'll take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. More sound bites.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, you're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. Before we go on, I should mention that for those of you who are true free software people who don't want their Linux encumbered by any non-free anything, the MS Core fonts are, in fact, copyrighted by Microsoft. There are free variants of Times, Arial, and Courier in a package called fonts.liberation. So, if you don't want to use anything encumbered by Microsoft in any way, then you can use those fonts instead. They are not exact. They cannot be exact because that would be copyright infringement because Microsoft copyrights those other ones. And, of course, you only get those three, Times, Arial, and Courier. You don't get Andale and Impact, Trebuchet, Verdana, Webdings, Comic Sans, so Georgia. So, but you do get those in the fonts-liberation package.
It looks, I'm not sure if this is the same thing. There's a Liberation Family. That's the default font for LibreOffice.
It is, yeah. It's very similar. But it is, like I said, it is not exactly Times, Arial, and Courier.
Yeah.
So if that's the kind of thing that
Richard
matters
Stallman
to you,
would like.
Right. If you're Richard Stallman, you do not want the MS fonts, Microsoft fonts. All right. Do we have someone? We do. Okay. All right. In that case, we're going to go to the phones, and we're going to talk to Tom from Brighton, New York. What's up, Tom?
Yeah, good afternoon. I turned in a bit late, so I don't know if you've dealt with this issue this hour. So I have an older PC, and it's got Windows 10 on it, and I've been trying to get the extended security update. So I, when I ever click on the links to do that, I get a message saying enrolling your device and extended security updates with a circular set of dots that rotate, and nothing else happens, just continues to rotate, nothing downloads, I don't get the security update at all. Finally, I just have to close out the window. So I'm wondering what I can do.
Make sure you have all of the latest Windows 10 updates loaded through 22H2 or 24H2, whatever it is. Now keep running Windows Update till it says there's no more.
I've done that, and I just keep getting this this message.
Has this been happening for days or just today?
No, since the 15th when the old Windows 10 expired. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm finding a couple of people are saying to run the system file scanner to make sure there's nothing messed up in your system files.
System file scanner? Is that a...
SFC.
Yeah, let me post this link.
Yeah, there's a link. And you go to the... Steve's going to post the link. Just follow it. But basically, it's a command line tool, and you run the system file checker to see if there's some damage to a file somewhere. It is possible that there is a, particularly in the registry.
Yeah, I did see some, I went online, and there is a procedure to follow that requires using regedit. But
you don't want to do that. Try SFC first.
Try SFC, you say?
Yeah, SFC. Steve's posting a link, the system file checker. Also, okay. Clear your Windows Update cache.
Yeah, it's okay. another
If you're using a VPN or a proxy, turn those off. If you're running an antivirus program, turn that off.
Right.
If you've got any of those extra command line tools that manually update your system, turn those off.
Okay.
So you need to turn. You need. You know. Basically, yeah. It's a delicate little flower.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You've got to be careful.
Yeah, but I want to stay away from regedit, obviously. That's kind of dangerous.
Yeah,
no, you want to stay away from that if you can. Try all these other things first. The biggest problem people are finding is they have to clear the Windows Update cache and temporarily disable any VPN or proxy server that they're using.
And that's one thing we'll never encourage nor support, people going in and doing regedit.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
right.
I don't want people calling me and saying I screwed up the registry.
Mm-hmm.
Fix it. No.
Yeah.
You're listening, okay. Dave? Sorry, yeah. I have a different Dave.
Yeah, no, I know who you're talking about.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't use those VPNs or anything like that, so I'm not running that.
All right. Well, clear the Windows Update cache.
Mm-hmm.
And that will that may solve your problem right there. That is a definite issue.
All right. I'll give that a try. Thanks again, guys.
Yep. All right. Thanks. Yeah. So then it's a multi-step process. You stop the Windows Update service, delete the contents of the C:\Windows/software distribution folder, then restart the service.
There's a procedure to follow.
Yeah, there's a procedure to follow. And that will help you with that. So, we're finding that fewer people can easily update than Microsoft was hoping. It, you know, they want people to update, but there are lots of roadblocks to update. I ran into the same problem you have. Joel, God bless you, Joel, gave me a couple of old laptops that cannot run Windows 11, and I'm turning them into Linux machines and passing them out. And one of them has TPM module 2.0. It's got 8 gig of RAM. It does all of that stuff. The processor is an 8-gen, not a 9-gen. And Microsoft just utterly refuses to upgrade it.
Isn't that one of the things you can do in Rufus? Remove those restrictions?
Yeah.
But then why why is it restricted? Does it mean the 8-gen is going to be too slow?
I'm not going to be the one that somebody has to call up and say, why isn't this working?
Yeah.
I don't know. Stop using it.
There was a cartoon going around, Windows 7 user hugging onto their Windows 7. Don't make me upgrade to Windows 10. And now 10 years later, that same user hugging the Windows 10 logo, don't make me upgrade to Windows 11.
Yeah, no, exactly. Exactly. All right, let's get back to the news, shall we?
Yeah.
Now the Microsoft news. Microsoft has confirmed a bug. I hope you were sitting down. I hope you were sitting down. Has confirmed a bug that disables USB mice and keyboards in the Windows Recovery Environment, or WinRE, after installing the October 14th update. The other problems identified with this latest update include smart card authentication issues in Windows cryptographic services, Windows Update standalone installer failures when installing from shared folders, and server-side applications that rely on Internet Information Services might fail to load. Microsoft has rushed out an out-of-band update to deal with these issues. Since most of these are not security issues, it is unclear whether they'll eventually be backported to Windows 10. Microsoft has fixed a major bug preventing Windows 365 users from launching the classic Outlook email clients on Windows systems. As explained when it acknowledged the issue in September, affected customers are seeing errors saying that the app cannot be started, that the Outlook window cannot be opened, and that an attempt to log into the Exchange account has failed. Since this is not a security issue, it is unclear whether it will be eventually backported to Windows 10.
And their answer is, don't run classic Outlook, run modern Outlook.
Right. Microsoft is now rolling out an out-of-band fix for Windows 11 to address a major bug the company introduced with its latest monthly Windows 11 update. Wait. This one is different from the other one. The original update released on October 14th accidentally broke the Windows recovery environment, this one leaves the USB people unable to factory reset anything. Again, this is not a security issue, so it is unclear whether it will be backported to Windows 10. Microsoft says the October 2025 Windows security updates are causing smart card authentication and certificate issues due to change design to strengthen the Windows cryptographic services. This known issue impacts all Windows 10, Windows 11, and Windows Server releases, including the latest versions designated for broad deployment. Affected users may observe various symptoms from the inability to sign documents and failures in applications that use certificate-based authentication to smart cards not being recognized as cryptographic service providers in 32-bit apps. Those are security updates, so probably they will eventually be fixed in Windows 10. Microsoft is rolling out a fix for Active Directory issues affecting some Windows Server 2025 systems after installing security updates released in September. This issue affects Active Directory domain services synchronization, including Microsoft Entra Connect Sync. This issue occurs only on Windows Server 2025 after installing the September 2025 Windows security update or later updates. And for those of you who have been dreaming of the day that Clippy returns, the wait is over. Copilot is getting a cute little cartoon face called Miko. Thankfully, it's optional. I don't know if it's Miko or Michael, because it's short for Microsoft Copilot. So you think it would be Michael, but it's M-I-C-O, which I would pronounce as Miko. Honestly, I don't care since I'm never going to use it anyway.
Miko's M-E-C-O, main engine cutoff. Yeah. Press to Miko.
Right. But it is luckily optional, and we hope you'll opt to give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Microsoft is all in on AI, as is everybody else these days. Jeez and crackers. Mm-hmm. It's the new secret sauce. Everybody wants you to use AI. Everybody wants you to be doing AI stuff. Every new phone is AI driven. Every operating system is AI driven. Everything is AI, AI, AI. So expect more and more of it.
It's a big double-edged sword, especially with the holidays coming up right now. A lot of companies and places are worried because there's bogus websites and ads coming up generated by AI that look like the original and the authentic site and business.
You want to know my favorite? There are AIs that will do things for you.
Security hole.
So you can say, hey, AI, I need to buy dish soap, and it will go on to Amazon, order dish soap, and have it delivered and pay for it for you. However, it is possible to craft a malicious ad that will set that off.
Yep.
And it doesn't have to be dish soap. They sell cars on Amazon.
Yep. Yeah.
And suddenly you got these huge bills.
And so suddenly you get these huge bills. And they can have them drop shipped to someone else. You get a bill for something you didn't buy and
never
don't
got.
Get.
Yep. Like a door dish.
Yeah, I'm not as big a fan of AI as everybody else. Well, this is a meme that's been going around lately. Mm-hmm. You know, average user. I have everything smart in my home. Smart light bulbs, smart switches, smart everything. Tech user. I keep a pistol next to my printer in case it makes an odd noise.
Yep. Linus Tech Tips did a video recently on fake speakers. But he said there's all sorts of fake products on the internet.
Yep.
And the scam is usually someone in an electronic store parking lot with a van full of these speakers. I bought too many of these for my client. He doesn't want these. These are $3,000 speakers. It says right on the box, $3,000. I'll give them to you for $500. And so one of their...
Nice deal.
Yeah. And so one of their viewers sent this in, so they bought it from him. And you look at the box, and yeah, it says $3,000 printed on the box. Nobody prints prices on the box.
Right.
there were so many glowing reviews printed on the box. It said it was a 7.1, 9.1, 11.1 surround sound system.
Wow.
But only showed six speakers.
Okay. Well, most people don't have any idea.
Yep. It said 26,000 watts.
26,000 watts.
All these.
You should be able to see it from space.
Yep. And so when they start taking it up, opening the box, it's just really well done fake box. So what is this really going to sound like? We know it's going to sound like crap.
Yeah, well,
But how crap? So they start taking
it
up.
Which level of crapitude are we going to be
And there
at?
Were so many levels. The strapping tape holding the box closed had the fake logo on it.
Wow.
And the logo for the fake company was very similar to the name of a real, very high-end speaker system. And so they're opening it up, and they're finding all the pieces in it. And the satellite speakers look like they had two drivers in them, but only one was wired. But the company went to the effort of putting a second paper cone driver in there, but no wire. There was no amp in the box, so the 26,000 watt didn't mean anything because there's no amp to power them.
Right.
And then Linus is saying, I knew we were getting scammed, but I feel really scammed. So they plugged it in. It was better than the crappy speakers in your flat screen TV.
Right, right. And so many people will say, this is an upgrade.
Right. But $100 buys you a really, really good surround box.
It really does. So, and before we go to the phones, I just want to say that I have become very leery of reviews on any website, but certainly on Amazon.
Because
one of the things Amazon does is they remove bad reviews.
Yeah.
And many of the reviews that are up there are obviously fake.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I could write, it would take me 11 minutes to write the code.
Yeah.
To you know.
Yeah.
Throw huge
glorified
great
things.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Linus said they went onto Alibaba and they found fake speakers and, you know, they're $100 a piece.
Yeah.
But it's marked 3,000 on the box. But I can buy 1,000 of them for $500.
Yes.
And so I go to my buddies and say, here, you can sell all these things too.
Yep.
And so you 1,000 of them at $500 claiming they're, and yeah, sure. That's really,
If I bought 1,000 of them for $500, and I give you 100 for $500,
yeah,
and I give you 100 for $500, I'm making good money already.
Yeah.
You sell one person for $500, you made your money
and
back.
And if he's hesitant, all right, 400 because I like you.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're still
money ahead.
Yeah,
exactly.
And there's so many of these fake products that the industry that creates them is right next to the industry that makes the real ones. So it's crazy.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mike from Irondequoit, New York. What's up, Mike?
I listen to you guys all the time.
Thanks.
Great. I love the conversation today, but I had to call and say this. Let's not forget about the major scam of all scams is to be forced to buying, you know, these tiny little light bulbs, these LED things, because they use a lot less energy.
Right.
But for some unknown reason, my electric bill hasn't gone down at all.
Because light bulbs are a very tiny part of your electric bill.
Yeah.
What are you trying to do? And then the latest news is that because it's an LED bulb, your eyes actually don't like them. It's bad for your eyes.
The color balance is a little off.
The color balance is off. And also, for some people, the frequency is bad for their eyes. I have, considering how truly horrible my eyesight is, I have to have a high-end monitor because the standard refresh rate on a monitor gives me a vicious headache.
Oh, man. I'm starting to get to the point where I can't even look at my iPad for more than 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, there's a color balance setting in the iPad called Night Shift where you can make it more blue or more yellow.
Yeah,
and that might help.
Yeah.
But in my case, it was a refresh rate.
Yeah. And the other thing with LED bulbs, they always say they last 5 years. And when it blows in a year, you don't remember, has it been 5 years?
I did that. I put a brand new bulb in the computer room.
Yep.
And I actually wrote down and stuck on my corkboard the date and time of that bulb. And it lasted 7 years, 3 months, and a couple of days. So I was happy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a long time, but I've got actual incandescent light bulbs, because when they started saying that they were going to go to LED, you can't find any more, I went to Home Depot and all over the place.
One of the bigger issues is called vampire power, and it's all of the power bricks that are plugged in all the time and not being used for all your chargers, like your microwave oven. All of these things that have a clock on them, they're drawing a little bit of power. Your TV, even when it's off, it's not all the way off, so you can push the power button and it comes on in 10 seconds. So all of these little things keep adding up to more and more and more power. So what you can do is
unplug everything.
Unplug everything.
Play the banjo.
And then watch your power meter spin. Yeah. And it should mostly stop, your heat.
Right.
And then you can plug things in and watch it start spinning up.
One of the things I've done is to, because I don't like, I sleep in the same room as my router.
Oh, all the blinky lights there, yeah.
Yeah, so what I did was I hardwired an actual outlet with a switch.
Yep.
So when I go to bed, we turn the switch off. There's no electricity going to any of the modem or the router. It's completely off.
Nice. Yep.
That's usually a troubleshooting when my computer doesn't work when I turn the light off. Is it plugged into the power switch?
Yeah, really.
The light switch?
Right.
Yeah.
That'll do it.
It keeps from frying yourself with 5G all the time, all night long with that 5G. Yep. You guys are great. Nice talking with you.
Nice chatting with you. Thanks, Mike.
Keep up the good work, man. I love your show.
Thank you. We'd love to hear that. Thank you.
Yeah, for all the saving electricity.
Yeah, conservationist.
Yeah. We have more and more and more devices.
Right.
So the switch from CRTs to LCDs to begin with was like a 90% drop in power use.
If you have a smart speaker, it's on 24/7.
Yep, always
and
waiting
listening.
For you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, I'm not going to get into is it actually paying attention or is it just waiting for
it's worse than that
trigger word. I don't care right now. But what I'm saying is it's always on and it's always listening. And so, yeah, you have that. You have your Wi-Fi on all the time because you got your phone on all the time. You got your watch on all the time. You got your laptop. You know, very few people, except apparently Mike, switches off the router every night. And so he has to switch it on every morning if he wants to do something.
And all your charging bricks that you unplug your phone, but you leave your charger plugged in.
Touch it. It's a little warm.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a little warm because there's electricity flowing through. And is there a light on it? Or is it plugged into one of those bricks that has a light on it?
Mm-hmm.
That's drawing power. Your computer, when you turn it off, is probably not actually entirely off.
Trickle power.
Trickle power is still running. If you've got a UPS, trickle power is still running. You know, the number of devices we have, if you have a thermostat, it is always running. There's a lot going on there. Now, that said, it is likely if you look at the breakdown of your bill, heating is way more of your bill than lighting, than electricity. Depending on how you heat, particularly here in the Rochester area, because we have Ginay, but still, it's not super cheap. Be aware, be very aware that those things are out there. Yeah, I mean, look at Dave. He's running Raspberry Pis 24/7.
Yeah,
those take up a decent amount of electricity.
And three computers
running 24/7. If you've got, and let's say you have a laptop instead of a I have a desktop. It runs 24/7. But if you've got a laptop and you close the lid, but it doesn't shut down,
It's still running.
It's still pulling power. So yeah, I mean, there's just a lot going on there.
Yeah, well, and people don't realize it, you know, and it is like you said, it's such a small part of your bill,
right?
That you don't even think about it because
right.
They'll say, it's just pennies.
But the other thing is, it's because instant gratification isn't fast enough anymore. When we open up our laptop, we want the screen to be there. We don't want to wait the 8 seconds for it to boot up again.
Yeah, if you remember how long it took a CRT tube TV to...
We used to turn everything on and go get coffee in the morning.
Yep. Yeah.
That's the way it worked.
Or connecting to the internet through the phone coupler.
Sure. I remember every time I wanted to connect to the internet, I had to kill a robot. Those dying screams haunt me to this day.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, you just got to be aware that you're using electricity.
Yeah.
Your router is always on. Your modem is always on.
I put mine on a battery backup, so if the power fails, it stays working.
It stays working. Yes.
My laptop has a battery. My iPad has a battery. I got 3 or 4 hours minimum.
Right.
On my UPS.
Right. But, yeah, and my UPS is running all the time, obviously. And that's just the way it works, you know. That's how you want things to be going nowadays. If you've got a backup NAS, for example, a NAS system and a network attached storage system on your machine to do backups, then you've got power going to that thing all the time.
So every little thing that saves power multiplied by 300 million U.S. people and 7-8 billion everyone else.
Right, and we wonder why the grid is in stress.
You may not
All right,
that.
We're going to take a quick break. Sorry, what?
You heard that?
Yeah. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 29 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member-supported, Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported, Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
And before we get back to the news, I want to say happy birthday to my son. Today is his actual birthday, 27 today. Time is just screaming along.
Remember 27?
Yeah, I know.
Puppy, still a puppy.
Yep.
I got socks older than that.
Yep.
I got a daughter older than that.
Yeah.
Mine are double. I got one daughter that's double.
You got grandchildren that old.
Yeah.
Because we just don't have enough AI in our lives, Samsung has inked a deal to include Perplexity's AI engine on its latest smart TVs, among others. Samsung's deal will make Perplexity an option when owners select TVs press the AI button. Samsung will let users choose among Perplexity, Microsoft's Copilot, and Samsung's own TV-focused AI. The service is free, and there isn't currently a way for paid Perplexity subscribers to access premium features. They're not the only ones. Google is also putting its Gemini assistant front and center on Google TV. Search on TV has always been a bit challenging since most of them don't have keyboards, so the addition of a voice-activated AI is a logical step. You still won't be able to find anything to watch, but at least you've now got someone to commiserate with. Just a week after rumors about Samsung canceling the Galaxy S26 Edge due to low sales of the ultra-slim S25 Edge, Apple is reportedly notifying its supply chain partners of a plan to scale back iPhone Air production. While the Air's battery life and the single camera are drawbacks compared to the iPhone 17 Pro, a lot of people online like the look and feel of the super slim phone, because they've been told to. Of course, great reviews don't always translate to great sales. The iPhone Air is reportedly selling in similar numbers to the iPhone 16 Plus, which it replaced in the iPhone lineup. Both phones made up the smallest portion of sales for their respective generations. Apple may have a problem with the latest version of iOS. Since iOS 26 launched in September, there have been reports around the internet of the new update significantly shortening battery life even on newer iPhones. However, as Apple noted, immediately after completing an update, particularly a major release, you might notice a temporary impact on battery life and thermal performance. This is normal, as your device needs time to complete the setup process in the background, including indexing data and files for search, downloading new assets, and updating apps. So don't get too disgruntled just yet. If you think scrolling the internet all day is making you dumber, just imagine what it's doing to the large language models of AI that consume a near-endless stream of absolute trash crawled from the web in the name of training. A research team recently proposed and tested a theory called LLM brain rot hypothesis, which posited that the more junk data fed into an AI model, the worse its outputs would become. Turns out, that's a pretty solid theory. So be even more careful when you trust AI. Speaking of dodgy AI, in a lawsuit filed on Wednesday, Reddit accused AI search engine Perplexity of conspiring with several companies to illegally scrape Reddit content from Google search results, allegedly dodging anti-scraping methods that require substantial investment from both Google and Reddit. Likening companies involved in the alleged conspiracy to bank robbers, Reddit claimed it caught Perplexity red-handed, stealing content that its answer engine should not have access to. But of course, you have access to us. So give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free 800-790-0415. Also, before you go on, let me say that if you want to continue to have access to us, then you need to become a member of this station. I think we're done being polite about this. It's time to become a member. Don't wait any longer. Don't hold off. Don't say, oh, I'll do it some other time. Do it now. Just go on over to jazz901.org. Click the Donate Now button. It's big. It's red. It's hard to miss. And join and become a member. I'm particularly talking to those of you who watch us on YouTube or on our listen to the podcast on your phones or whatever. You're already on a device that will connect you to become a member. Get cracking.
And there are a lot of publishers are suing a lot of AI companies. And the rebuttal is, well, our AI just read your website. So you can't make it illegal to read a website. But then Elon Musk is suing Apple and ChatGPT for not including Grok in their latest deal.
Right.
And so the answer there is, well, Grok isn't very nice.
Right.
We don't want a Nazi AI.
Well, exactly. Yeah, so AI, look, again, AI is like pretty much any technology. Take it with a grain of salt and pay special attention. It can save you time and effort, but it is not always correct. It is not always right. So always
it was trained on
check.
The internet.
It was trained on the internet.
Yeah.
So always check.
Garbage in, garbage out.
Right. We've talked before about how faculty are still struggling with how do you deal with AI when you're asking students to write papers and stuff. How do you manage that?
Plagiarism.
My favorite one is a high school teacher who told his class, I want you to use AI to write this paper. Then I want you to explain why it's wrong.
Yeah. I've read that some people have started including in their AI prompt and verify your sources.
Right. And that's important. And we all take shortcuts. AI is no exception. It will say, oh, I read this. I've told a story before about the lady who was suddenly being told she was an expert in something she had absolutely no idea
of.
Because one AI hallucinated a paper that had her as an author. Another AI picked up on it. Another AI picked up on that.
Yep.
Then all of a sudden, all the AIs were going, look, all these other AIs know about her. They added it, and now she's the expert in this subject. She has absolutely nothing to do with.
And there's no way to remove all of that.
And there's no way to remove all of places. That.
Or the whole trend now in vibe coding, where you have the AI write your code for you.
Right.
And they make up libraries that solves your problem.
Almost always, vibe coding doesn't work for me. It often gives me a decent start.
Yeah. But which is a good use for
which
it.
Which is a good use for it, and I use it for that. I do. But it certainly isn't going to actually write the code for me. There's all these things that say, you know, use vibe coding to create your next phone app. Unlikely. At best, unlikely.
Yeah.
All right.
Not even on a good day?
I didn't hear that because your mic is down. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is James from Rochester, New York. What's up, James?
Hi, Nick. Yes, I'm in the process of enrolling in the extra security for Windows 10.
Sure.
And I just want to make sure I'm doing the right thing here. I did click on the enroll now, and it tells me I'm eligible to enroll at no cost.
Perfect.
Does it say why?
Do I just click the blue enroll button now?
Well, does it say why you can enroll for free?
It says, as you've already backed up your Windows settings, you're eligible to enroll in extended security update at no cost.
Perfect. Go ahead and hit that enroll button. You're in.
Extended. It's valid.
It's valid. It's good. You're good.
You're good to go.
It says I'm enrolled. Is that the end of it?
That's it. You're in. Congratulations.
Thank you. That was easy.
That was easy. They've tried to make it as easy as possible. They still want you on 11, but they have made it easy to get to keep 10 for another year.
And that was the sticking point on the previous caller, is he hit enroll and nothing happened.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't have to reboot. That's it? I'm done?
You're done. Yep. The big test.
The easiest thing I ever did. Thank you for your help.
That's our pleasure, James. Enjoy.
Yep.
Have a nice day.
You too. Bye-bye.
The big test is going to come on November's Patch Tuesday, which is the 11th.
Right.
And will Windows 10 get in any updates?
Right.
So that Microsoft...
Microsoft
said they'll get security updates.
It will get security updates.
Microsoft could say there aren't any.
Well, and here's the thing. Microsoft has now said that they are breaking the updates into security updates and quality updates.
Yep.
Windows 10 users will not get quality updates.
Which are bug fixes.
Which are bug fixes.
Yeah.
So, for example, if there's a bug in, say, the mouse driver, that's not a security issue.
Yep.
They're not going to fix it. Let's say there's a bug in Notepad. They're not going to fix it. Let's say there's a bug that now prevents Explorer from running. It's not a security bug. They're not going to fix it. So you have to be aware that there's a whole bunch of different things that we don't all know is going to happen come next month. All right, our next caller is Jim from Virginia. What's up, Jim?
This is actually Will in Virginia.
Oh, Will! Sorry, Will.
My bad.
That's okay. That's okay. I think for the answer for me, and I've been taking classes at Virginia Peninsula Community College to get an IT degree, the answer for me has been to use AI to do certain heavy lifting, like to do research papers, to collect sources of information, and to do a rough draft, and then when the rough draft is completed, to smooth it out using AI.
Yep, that's a good use for it. You do have to vet everything it says, but it's a good place to start. It's a good solid base. Well done, Will. That makes sense.
Yeah, that's a proper way to do it.
That's exactly the way to do it.
Yep. Oh, I am a member, by the way.
That's what we like to hear, Will.
That.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, that's my two cents, guys.
We like it. Thank you, Will. Thank you very much. And, hey, you could join Will, too, you know. Will is a member of this station. Why?
Yeah.
Because he values what we bring every week.
And he's all the way down in Virginia.
He's in Virginia. If you believe that you are getting any kind of anything from this show, whether it's good information or just humor
entertainment
or annoyance, I don't care what the reason is. you're getting something from this show, we would like to get something from you. And it's an easy thing to do. You can join and become a member of this station. We would like to stay on the air. And the only way, remember, this station does not get any government money. Nobody's getting any government money right now. But we don't get any government money. We don't get any state money, city money. We don't get any of that.
Never have, never will.
Never have, never will. What we get is money from you. When we say we're member supported, we ain't kidding. That's who supports this station. That's you. Don't look around. It's you. And the only way we stay on the air is when people like you make that call and make that pledge. You don't have to call. You can join right online. Just go to jazz901.org. Hit the big red donate now button and go for it. It works great on mobile, so you have your phone with you right now. You're watching us on YouTube on a computer or on the phone. That's a perfect way for you to make that call, to make that pledge. So make that pledge right now. Get online, jazz901.org. Make that pledge. We'd love to end this pledge drive early. The only way we do that is with your dollars. So please join. You can see what the membership levels are. You can see all the ways that you can get a benefit from membership. We haven't talked much about Jazz-O-Matic, where you can spread your payment out over 12 months so the bite is a little smaller each time. We haven't talked about the membership card, which gives you the most amazing set of discounts, two-for-ones, whatever.
You could save hundreds of dollars a year on the member card alone.
Yeah, you will more than make back your money on the member card. I guarantee it. If you go out at all with any regularity, you will definitely make back your money. So please make that pledge. You can do that right online at jazz901.org. In the meantime, we'll talk to Steve from Greece, New York. What's up? Oh, no, apparently we won't talk to Steve from Greece, New York. We're going to wait a minute before we do that while Dave tries to figure out what those little light-up buttons are for.
Steve? Yeah, I'll try again.
Apparently. He's working on it. We're working diligently. And that gives you plenty of time to get on and make that pledge. And we'll talk to Steve from Greece, New York. What's up, Steve?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. You were talking about using AI to write code. I use it to write my VBA codes. One of the things I like to do is I'll take a whole website and copy it and put it into a Word document. But then the images just make it a huge document.
Right.
So I had it write a code that said the selected images, if there are selected images, resize them to this size.
Nice.
Make them smaller, 250 by 250, 300, whatever. But it makes them small enough so it has the volume that the document takes up.
That's a brilliant idea. VBA is the Visual Basic for Applications. It's the programming language inside Microsoft Word and Excel and PowerPoint. And having knowledge of that is great, but having an AI to write that code for you, if it works, is even better.
Yeah, I am not big at coding, and I looked at the results and said, yes, that's not the way I'd have written it.
which may be good.
Oh, it is good. Believe me. It is good.
Good.
But yeah, there's some things where I'll just, you know, it is good for certain things beyond just the start.
Yep. It is, like I said, it is useful if you get the right answer.
Yes.
And that's the hard part, you know, knowing what the right answer is. I mean, when it's coding, it's easy, right? Yeah. You run the code. If it doesn't work, you got the wrong answer. But, and of course, the nice thing about it is you can iterate, right? So you can go back and say, this didn't do exactly what I liked, or this didn't work at all, or this library doesn't exist, or whatever, you know, whatever the error is. And then it will apologize profusely and try something else. Or in my case, it often tries exactly the same thing again.
Yeah.
I do find that it says, oh, thank you for telling me that link I gave you doesn't exist. You're right. This link doesn't exist or something. Yeah.
Yeah, you would think it could do that ahead of time, but apparently not, no.
Yeah.
There's a meme going around. Was 1995 really 30 years ago? And the AI says, no, it wasn't 30 years ago. If we subtract 2025 from 1995, we get 30 years. So, yes, 1995 was 30 years ago.
Yep. Yeah, that's pretty much the way it works. And what we're finding is... Still talking about AI. What we're finding is that it's the people who know how to craft their prompts, how to ask an AI to do
properly,
and you know it's saying, you know, check your sources. It's setting it up, saying you are a Visual Basic for Applications expert, and I want you to write code that does this, 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 and this exactly, and then verify it works, and then tell me.
I'm liking it, though, more and more for the use on search engines and that, and being able to give, you know, a little more detailed information on what I'm looking for, and it goes out and actually does give me a more descriptive...
Now, again, you have to be aware that it might be lying. The other thing is, this is making Google very anxious.
And a lot of websites have noticed a huge drop in revenue.
Yeah.
People are using AI to get an answer instead of going to the website and looking.
I mean, when I ask Google to find something and the result is nothing like what I asked,
yeah,
I'm going to use the AI, which actually gives me something I can check out.
Right. Yeah.
And right. What the tip you guys had today about telling it to verify the sources. I had never thought of doing that. It's now part of my...
Yeah.
You shouldn't have to think of doing that.
You shouldn't have to think, but you do. But you do.
Yeah.
And that's just one of the things that, you know, people who are learning to do AI, Will was talking about taking a class in AI, and that I'm sure that's one of the things that he learns. And you also learn that AI isn't going to do the work for you. It's going to give you the foundation for the work. It's going to help you do the work. It's like having, I shouldn't say this. It's like having an academic assistant.
Yeah.
Too many faculty use the academic assistant to do all the work. But the reality is the academic assistant should be doing the scut work and leaving the actual teacher to do the academic
work. And it's got to be verified by a human.
Right.
AI results at their value. You've got to do some checking and verification there too.
Right. And like Steve said, for when you're asking it to write code, it's easy. It worked or it didn't work.
Yep.
Right. That's pretty much the, you know, it's a binary, it's a Boolean thing right there. But for other things, you have to vet the sources. You have to check the logic. And you have to go back and see if, in fact, it's right in what it says.
That's why almost every research paper, research paper has a list of sources and the bibliography. We have a word for the list of sources.
Right, right, right. And you will see that now on some...
¿Dónde está la biblioteca?
you will see that now on some search engines when you get an AI result, there'll be a link that says, this is, you know, basically, this is where I got this information.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean the website is correct.
Right.
But at least it's given you a source, whether it verified that source is separate.
Now, does it know the Onion is parody?
Right.
Right. What do you mean?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I read in The Onion about this great new thing happening, you know?
Yeah, that's one of my main sources of information.
Sure. That and The Daily Show, exactly.
Yeah. Well, what's the Rochester one? The Inner Loop.
The Inner Loop.
The Inner Loop, yep. Rochester fake news.
Yep. All right, thanks, Steve.
Okay, thank you. You guys have a good day.
You too.
Bye.
Yeah, I tend to use AI significantly these days. But yes, to go back to losing revenue. It used to be that websites got revenue because sites like Google would drive people to them. So, for example, if you come to one of my websites and I'm showing you ads, and you have blocked ads, If I'm showing you ads, then I get a tenth of a hundredth of a thousandth of a penny every time you see an ad. This quarter I got 3 cents.
Nice.
You buying lunch?
I'm buying dinner, buddy.
One of the big garbage publishers.
Yeah.
It filed a case in Germany against Adblock Plus and the company makes Adblock Plus, saying it's a copyright infringement for Adblock Plus to change the code of a website before displaying it.
Oh, interesting.
Because a website is a program, and you're not allowed to change a program.
Right.
And so if that holds, they're extrapolating that, not just ad blockers, but screen readers, anti-trackers.
Yep. All of that stuff.
Yeah, all of that stuff.
So, but it used to be I would get like 4 cents or sometimes one quarter. I had the magic number of 7 cents. But that's going down because many places get their answers from AI, not by going to my website.
And the AI scrapes the back end code. See, that's the difference.
Right.
From reading the front of a website, the AI goes in like behind your web browser and just captures all the code, the text of the page. And so that's how it knows. And it doesn't load any of the ads, so no one gets paid.
Right. Internet
is free because ads pay for it.
Right, exactly.
It's not free.
Internet is not free. I wonder, you know, I use 9.9.9.9 and 1.1.1.2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they would be illegal in this German law because they're blocking ads and trackers.
Exactly. Interesting. All right, that's it. We're done for another week. I really, really hope that you went and joined and became a member. If you haven't, please do so now. Just go to jazz901.org. Hit that big red donate. This is our last chance for you to become a member around this show for this pledge drive. Jazz901.org. Hit that big red donate now button and do it today. Thank you. I want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. We will be back in just 166 hours. A whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. Be good to one another, will you?